All right, welcome everybody. My name is Steve Hansen, and I'm here to present to you what we did at Cargill to launch Microsoft Link 2013, and we just completed that project in September. We had a really interesting journey, and I have a lot to share. This presentation is meant to be a 200-level course, so we've got some technical people here in the front from Cargill. There's some technical people in the back who helped us implement, and so feel free to ask questions, and we would like this to be fairly interactive. You don't have to feel like you're interrupting us. I think we left about 15 minutes for Q&A at the end, but if you've got a specific question you'd like to interject in the middle of the PowerPoint slide, then we'll have you come up to the microphone here and ask the question, so make sure we get it on the recording as well so other people can enjoy it later on. And so without further ado, the first, I don't know, six or seven people who ask a question, I'll hand out this free $10 off Skype telephony. And so feel free to, you know, win something in your first customer session. So my name is Steve Hansen again. I am the manager of Link Solutions at Cargill. And so my team and the represented while here rolled this product out. I'm also the manager of media services, so that means everything video, conferencing, the support of the rooms within Cargill. So Cargill has a lot of conferencing going on, and so I really appreciate the work that people do to put this stuff on. It is substantially difficult to do a good conference, and we try to articulate best practices all the time about that. These guys are really pulling it off. So this is Cargill, and I put some pictures up here. We're a very, very broad and diverse company. Some of these pictures show our soybean connectivity in the fields, or you know, working with customers. We have holding facilities all over the world. Here are the guys measuring some rolled steel. So we have somebody at the top doing some trading. You know, animal protein businesses, I think that picture's from Argentina. We got cocoa farmers in Africa that we're working with to teach them how to produce better crop, how to get it to market better. And so from a diversification standpoint, Cargill is extremely broad. We have 142,000 people globally. We operate in 67 countries. In the last fiscal year, which ended May 31, we had $136.7 billion in sales. We operate in over 1,000 locations. Many of those locations are very small. So network connectivity is an extreme challenge. We are not a high technology company, although we do certainly have hubs of technology and IT. And those hubs are well connected, but we really stretch the limits when it comes down to trying to use voice over IP, for example. And so we'll talk a little bit about how we accomplish that and not burn the network down at the same time. We're committed to feeding the world in a responsible way. Part of being a responsible company is having connectivity so you can reach out to experts, you can talk to people when things are happening and you need to react to it, whether you need to find that food expert at the right time, at the right moment, or whether you need to plan a go-to-market strategy. So when we're trying to feed people, we're talking about food safety, we're talking about supply chain logistics, we're talking about many, many things, and better connectivity, better communications is critical for that. Trying to seek to minimize environmental impact, improve the communities where we live and work, and part of that is the outreach capability, and Link is a great tool for outreach, as we saw in the keynote with the capabilities of connecting through Skype and Federation. We are able to connect with people outside of the company and improve those communities where we live and work. It's not all about business, how we operate. I'll introduce the team a little bit, but just before I move on, I mean, Cargill, if you think about it, almost, I would say, I heard a metric one time, like 75% of what you eat in a given day, specifically in North America, probably has a Cargill product in it, or we help move it. I would say that number of touch points would become even broader if I was to say whether we influence price on those different things that you're interacting with all day long. And so if you're picking up food and enjoying it, hopefully Cargill has had a measure of success in delivering that to you in the way you like it. So our team is very small. So I'm the manager of the team. We've got three Link architects here that keep the show running, so to speak. We've also got a couple of people that do level two support. And that's it. So for a company as broad and large as Cargill, that's what we went live with, was that small of a team, and we got it done. And we found that this solution is very stable and lends itself well to not waking us up in the middle of the night. So we also want to talk about each person. I'll get that to the next slide, but we also want to call out the people in the room, Avtex. Richard Brintonson in the back of the room from Avtex helped build our Link 2010 implementation that we went live with in March of 2012. And we replaced a Lotus SameTime product that was used for instant messaging in Cargill globally. And really the stability of that platform gave us the street cred, so to speak, within Cargill to go on to that next phase, which was Link for conferencing, rolling out 2013. And that's where we found Perficient. Jason Sloan in the back of the room, and there's other Perficient representation. He snuck up here. We have other representation in the room from Perficient. It's top-notch organizations, and these guys are extremely smart. Came in and took a very complex company and complex requirement and brought us live. And again, since we went live in March 2012, we have yet to have a major critical incident that caused significant downtime, which is amazing on an on-premise, full on-premise deployment. And we'll talk about the number of servers. It's fairly complex, but the resiliency and capabilities of it have kept us live and up and running since day one. So who's here today? So Joe Millage is here, primarily responsible for the voice components of our implementation. Also works heavily with quality of service and call admission control with our networking team. Has a background in a number of voice technologies, been with the company a long time, has kind of really own the voice rollouts within our food platform for a long time, and now he's part of our team and has really learned the Link product, obviously. He's also the owner of Thunder Country, Kick 96.7 FM in Iowa, so if you're ever driving through and you want to listen to some good country or stream it on the net, he would love to have you do that. Yeah, download the app. We also have here Brendan Anderson. Brendan is primarily responsible for our client space, our support, end user experience. He's been a member since August 2012. He's also, perhaps, Minnesota's best known Jack Sparrow impersonator. He's hired by the Minnesota State Fair, and he really pulls it off, so feel free to ask him about that. He's got, and Matt Ernest. Matt is the architect responsible for our core, so our servers, our connectivity to the network, DNS, all sorts of things that keep servers up and communicating. So those three people kind of bridge each other well, but in terms of specialization, that's how we decided to design the team. Matt also has traveled and helped support the Pro Bowl the last 7 years. So I just got back from Hawaii, and now he's in Vegas. Guy lives a blessed life. So where were we and how did we get here? So back in 2008, Cargill had a fairly diverse set of technologies that provided our collaboration capabilities. And so we started down this path of building a vision of where we wanted to get to. We had over 55 vendors providing different solutions. We had specifically in the conferencing space that we had on the grid, knew of, negotiated contracts, 15 contracts in Cargill for doing conferencing. And imagine just the energy that went into doing that. And we consolidated all of that into a strategy that said, when we get done with this, we'll probably land on two vendors. And Microsoft, we are already an Exchange shop, SharePoint, Microsoft Office is a natural fit for us to kind of flow into the communication space with Microsoft. We said that'll be our strategic partner for collaboration solutions. We had a very broad deployment of Cisco telephony, and so we decided that we aren't going to be displacing and ripping that out. We'll get the value of that investment. And so we've worked in this hybrid environment for quite some time, and I've learned a lot about trying to do that and do it well. So directionally, we wanted to make sure that we had people capable of communicating across geographic distance. We had a lot of diversity and language within our company, with a company that size, and just being able to have one solution integrated, click, 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 all through the different modalities, always up to video, we thought, let's put that in one stack. And so where have we gone? So then we said, let's try it out. We, like everybody, were impacted by the economic fluctuation that had happened, and Cargill was not immune to that. It was very difficult to get a greenfield IT project off the ground during some of those time frames within 2009, 10, and 11. And so we had some executives went to Microsoft, and they said, tell us about how you can help. And they said, you guys are missing the boat on the unified communication thing. And we said, we know. And so a good partnership was developed between Dell, who we have strategic contracts with, and Microsoft to build a lab environment. So this slide just kind of graphically says we had a pilot. Dell and Microsoft put this thing together, we stood it up, and from March to September proved that, wow, this stuff is real, and it's changing the game of how we communicate and collaborate in our company. So we put a lot of traders on that business, on that pilot. They have a need to communicate immediately, fast, and often. We put executives on that. We put just, you know, Joe Schmo, and we said, how did it work? And basically the response was, from my cold, dead hands, will you ever rip this away from me? And so we said, okay, let's go into the project then. And we got approval. And from there, which was June 2012, we launched, you know, the Link 2010 environment, instant messaging and presence. Very stable, had about 25,000 active users. In September, we started in earnest on the phase two project, which we said will bring us conferencing, voice, and video. We did a lot of work up to the point where we said, okay, this thing's gonna actually happen, we're gonna go live. And so we started building and equipping our business partners within the company. There's about 240 people that represent IT connectivity to the business. And so we told them, here's what's happening, here's how you can, you know, get your teams ready, what types of technology and devices they're gonna need to adopt. We started executing that multi-phase, multi-mode training plan, did classroom, we did a web presence, we did on-demand, kind of click on your own accord training, and brought in an internship team actually that built a lot of that, and they went team by team, conference room by conference room, did a lot of stand-up, show-and-tell kind of things. Meanwhile, we were building it and got ready to pressure test it. In August 2013, we did a fairly large ad to our pilot environment, got it staged up to about 3,000 people, and we confirmed that, yes, it's ready to go. And that's when we went live. So very recent in our history, we went through a monster project and went live, and so far, so good. So before I get too far into it, how has it changed the way we work? I would say that Link is doing what we thought it would do. It's giving us work flexibility. I've had people talk to me, just randomly connect with me and say, wow, this has really changed my ability to work from home. We've had people on medical leave, you know, pregnancy, where they had to stay at home, they couldn't come to the office, and they were able to stay connected. Global Cotton business, our Global Cotton trading business, operates and originates source material from 40 countries, pushes it to 20 others, and, you know, they operate in places where there's very low connectivity. A lot of places in Africa specifically have very challenging telephony situation, although their internet connectivity is often good. And so using Link and being able to communicate across that continent has really brought those people together and allowed them to operate like one connected company. We've got acquisitions. People called me up and said, hey, you know, at dinner we were talking about how Link has really helped us build connections. We acquired this company and bang, right away we can talk to them on the phone, we can do video. We feel like we're building partnerships. From a cost-saving perspective, I could go on and on. You know, this is just one comment in the video space. We had two examples recently where somebody said, hey, I was thinking about building a video room. It's gonna cost us about $50,000. We decided to go live with Link. We bought some web cameras. We upgraded a little bit of network, and we avoided a substantial cost there. So, you know, just again, the ways that this thing just runs on its own and produces value for your company, I would attest that we've seen that happen. Engaging our workforce, here's somebody in Asia, basically the statement is saying they're really jazzed about Link. I mean, they're like, these things are transformative. They raise team engagement. And so, again, we had a lot of people that for their whole work experience didn't have face connectivity with their managers, didn't have face connectivity with the people that they worked with every day. We did not have a desktop video solution until Link rolled out. And day one, we delivered pretty substantial capability to them, and it was a surprise in a very good way from an IT story to see that happen. Here's a really unique case. We have a business in China. Cargill Animal Protein has launched a large operation in 2011. They signed an agreement with this government organization to produce poultry in a supply chain that was connected all the ways from egg to final product. There's a lot of things going on, whether it's SARS or bird flu, things that were concerning in that environment, and we wanted to have an end-to-end connectivity from a supply chain that delivered a quality product in a safe way. So one of the things that they have to do is sequester the workforce. That is part of the role of the people coming into this organization are that you will sign up for a 45-day stint. You'll be on a farm working to produce, high value, high safety chicken product, but you'll have to stay there. Their managers and supervisors are free to leave the building, the facility, but all the workers there are on the farm. And so connecting with them and staying close and staying engaged and knowing what's going on, they were struggling with how we were going to do that and attract a good workforce. They came to us and said, hey, we're just going live with this operation. Can we use Link? And we were kind of like, well, we're kind of trying to launch our project. We had a lot of things going on, but we said, it sounds like a really compelling use case. Let's do that. And so here's an example where, you know, the business unit leader was giving a award. You know, the people on the farms were able to participate, watch that event live as it happened. They were able to have people walk up to the screen, talk into the web camera, and interact with those leaders. Over the Chinese New Year, we had people hooked up. And if you see, I don't know if I did a good enough job, but up here, you can see things circled in red. There's a little hockey puck speaker. And there's a web camera tied up to that pole there. And so these people in the farms were sequestered again, but they had their own Chinese New Year and were able to watch the actual event going on. And they would walk up to the web camera and to the speakerphone and interact with people. It was extremely engaging. And this is the kind of thing that is really compelling. You do this kind of stuff, and this is why you do IT, right? This is why we're in this industry, in this business. But you can't do it unless you have the business case. So to get to the fun stuff, how did we convince people that we wanted to have Link at a reasonably substantial cost deployed in the company? We said we want to have no one-size-fits-all solution. We had a number of solutions where we're kind of like, well, use this, and this is what's approved in Cargill. It happened to be fairly expensive in many cases, whether it was just the video or the types of telephony or the types of conferencing we had one flavor. We said, let's give another flavor out there and give people a managed choice. So we said, you know, a lot of the places where we'll find value immediately to pay for this project will be these small, low-risk meetings that happen. And we started modeling where we'd find that. And we found there's a substantial amount of money. If we just let people use it for their team meetings, we'll displace this, enough cost to justify the project. We also said, from a capability standpoint, we didn't have any desktop video, as I mentioned. We started talking about travel offsets. People are like, yeah. Is somebody really not going to travel? Or if the plane, you know, is still taking off, are you really saving carbon? We had a lot of that pushback. You know, we tried to say, well, this is green. You know, people don't have to travel. But really, we've started to see that materialize as well. We've had examples where people might have taken 4 trips. They've taken 2. They still want to have that face-to-face capability, but video is good enough to displace a good portion of it. Mobile devices in Cargill, we had BlackBerry. We had very limited capability on a mobile phone. We just started a mobile iron project, actually, that got some people calendar and email. But for the masses, if you weren't subscribed to that, and there was only about 2,000 people that had that, you had basically a telephone, right? So when we went live with Link, all of a sudden, boom, you had conferencing, you had video, you had voice over IP, you had a lot of cost offset happening there. Connectivity to third parties, customer suppliers, all the things you guys all know about Link. And essentially, it aligned to Cargill's strategy. We wanted to be the partner of choice. And to do that, you have to be online, ready to take the call when your customer, vendor, or partner needs you. And so those were the things that people got interested in when we showed them it could be done. And we started saying, okay, here's where we'll find the opportunity to save the money initially. And the easy kind of place to look was in the conferencing space because, like I said, we had, you know, one solution. And it was, you know, a very high quality solution, but it had a price point that even at a very low risk, again, meeting or an internal team meeting, we were taking cost on that we probably didn't need to. We segmented that and found that even within the IT organization, highly capable people in terms of technology adoption, we were consuming about 21% of that spend. So there were some easy wins in front of us to say, well, we could adopt a new type of technology, allow people to use it, and save right away to justify our cost. And if we did some segmentation, and this is one thing I'd encourage people to, as you're looking at launching a project or justifying additional phases of a project to launch new capabilities, we segmented where the people would be most likely to offset cost very quickly. And we found, if you can look at the graph, that a fairly small group of people generate a lot of the cost. And you'll find that in your company as well, that there's very active talkers that tend to you know, organize and host meetings, and just training those people and giving them another option, they'll find a way to use it and save money. Our top 15 users averaged $1,000 a month. Top 60 averaged $500 a month. So those were some places where we decided that we're going to do some active marketing. And the thing is, our trend line was continuing to grow. So Cargill has a growth strategy. Every 8 years, we tend to double in size and people and revenue. And so we were looking at, you know, a 20% annual growth over the last 3 years. And so when we went back and said, hey, this isn't changing. We're, if you want to reduce your SG&A costs, your cost before sales, here's a way you can do that. How often do you give somebody a capability within a company to say, every day you can contribute to your bottom line by just clicking a button? And that's a very easy win. So we said, let's change the graph. For a number of costs, not just conferencing, but we had a lot of costs in many, many spaces. So that's the business case, and I can get into more detail about that if anybody's interested. I do have business cards in the back of this room, so feel free to grab them and reach out to me. I'd love to hear about your projects, and I just like collaborating with people that know a lot about Link. But so as we're doing this technical thing, we said, let's start build our capacity to tell this story and educate people how to adopt the product. So we said, we'll bring in an internship team. And this internship team did some phenomenal work. Now let me describe, this is a group of 4 college students, and some of them were sophomores, some were juniors. We got dropped into our team in the middle of the summer, in the middle of this massively complex technical exercise, and they said, you know, how can we help? We want to have a good experience at Cargill. Said, help us sell Link and tell people how to adopt the product. So they set up some project deliverables. Brendan Anderson here was the supervisor of the team. We said, let's get a storefront out there. Let's get a website where we can talk about the material, the devices, and the use case patterns that we want people to adopt. Let's build training material that they can take themselves. Let's build workshops. You know, we're not going to be able to be everywhere where Cargill's at. There's 1,000 locations. Let's give people the capability to have their own workshop where all they have to do is get people in a room, talk about, hey, let's save some money, click on several videos and educate themselves about what's happening. We also said, you know, obviously promotion, awareness, you know, those are all key things. It's a very short project, 5 weeks. These 4 individuals came in the first week they interviewed us. They said, what do you want to get done? Within the next 4 weeks, basically, of that engagement, they built the website, they produced the material, extremely engaging, fun, entertaining people, and we just let them run. And they came back to us and said, what if we did this with the website? Yes, do that. You know, what if we, you know, were to host some online sessions in the middle of the night for people in Asia? Yes, that'd be awesome. So they just rocked it. If you look at the graph here, there's the 4 of them there, happy faces, and they're loving this project. They had an IT background. They had MIS and computer science curriculums going on at their schools. And so one of the guys was really good at websites, and he built this storefront, we call it, where we talked about what type of Link flavor are you going to get, Link 2010 or Link 2013. We talked about the types of operating system and devices that they would need to have. We brought in people from device vendors. Here's the guy from Plantronics talking about how to select headsets. We shot video of them, posted on the website. We did all these different tutorials and FAQs. We researched the Microsoft TechNet, all the different articles online. We did a lot of interviews with people saying, what are you struggling with? And again, this is now probably week 2.5 into this 5-week engagement, and just really generated a lot of soft value and hard value. The user acceptance, we had people, you know, first showing up in small groups. Pretty soon, by the time we had our 10th, 15th session, we had a very substantial turnout for people wanting to learn about Link because they heard about this and saying, wow, we're going to get desktop video. That was the big sell. But then they learned about how they could save money, and they went back and said, wow, these guys are talking about we could save several thousand dollars a month. And then their controllers and business leaders got engaged and said, what are you guys talking about? So then they would start showing up to our sessions as well. So our marketing plans are really still going on. We're continuing to offer information sessions. If people have team meetings, we're still leveraging the content that we built. A lot of these things, again, are meeting in the box. Here you go. Have your own Link session. You'll hear us talking about it. Just organize a session talking about where you want to displace cost, and these tutorials will show you how to get it done. I do have, and Joe, can you help me switch this? I have the video that these guys produced, these interns. And again, 5-week project.
Link conferencing, voice and video. For the first time ever, you can turn a chat session into a virtual meeting. A meeting between many. A meeting across borders. All on Cargill's internal network. Link conferencing, voice and video, a better way to connect.
So these guys just did a great job. And we wound up having that make it to our corporate portal that everybody logs into every day. And so right away they're like, oh, this link thing, I saw a pretty engaging video and they wanted to learn more. So again, if you're looking to launch a project, you know, work with your internal communications team members, produce something like that with your media team. Very simple to do, just do a voiceover and publish it on your corporate portal. Huge engagement. After that hit, people were like, you know, dialing us up and saying, yeah, tell me more when this is hitting my business unit. So that's kind of the lead off. I'll turn it over to Matt, and maybe if you have your mic on.
Just this one. Yep. I think, hello? Okay.
And again, if we have any questions, we'll have time at the end, or feel free to raise a hand.
Thanks, Steve. So I'm Matt Ernest. Steve, in a brief introduction earlier, I've been with the team for about a year. Prior to being on the team, I had absolutely no experience with Link, so it was kind of a, hey, do you want to learn this type of thing? We'll farm it, you know, we kind of want to farm this through the company. I thought it was a great opportunity to jump into something I had no idea. It's been a fun ride, to say the least, over the last year. As you can imagine. So I'll take you through some of the nuts and bolts of Link. So we're, as Steve mentioned, a large company, a lot of sites, a lot of everything under the sun. You can't even make this stuff up sometimes. So what's the footprint like? So we have 52 servers with 100% dedication to Link. Those span across four data centers. We have Chicago, Sao Paulo, Singapore, and SASP and Ghent, which is, you know, AP, EMEA, LA, and NA, of course. 42 of those servers are physical, 10 are virtual. We have six pools with about 70,000 users. There are, of those six pools, the caveat is kind of there's four of those are actual user pools. Two of these pools is where we get unique. We have this hidden DMZ environment. Think of what a director is in Link today. That unfortunately didn't satisfy our security requirement to have that director, having that external meeting join, come directly onto CNET without any authentication. CNET is, of course, Cargill Network. So I'll get into a little bit more of that later. But again, we got the four pools, eight edge servers, and another security requirement is those edge servers didn't meet, well, they... We needed a way to block denial of service and force TLS authentication on those. And we actually procured a product from a gentleman in the back of the room here, Rui Maximo, from the company Link Solutions. And we have a security web filter installed on all those edge servers, as well as two TMG servers. And that's working well and satisfied the requirements and et cetera. So we have 12 GoDaddy certificates in our deployment. I mean, one cert alone has over 70 SAN entries. And I know Jason Sloan, who helped deploy Link, was that is one insane certificate, to say the very least. And we do have to go to a public. We do have to have public certificates based on our lack of PKI. We're still working on PKI at Cargill, and once we get it. Right, so 50 roughly SIP domains, and then of course, you know, we have full DR functionality as well in there. So back to this whole funky director role deal. So, you know, due to an internal security requirement, we're not allowed to use traditional directors specifically. We're not allowed to have that anonymous conference join authenticating on our network. So the solution, which was actually developed in-house at Cargill from one of our main kind of infrastructure IT kind of gods, if you will. He said, hey, could this work? essentially, just threw it out there. And Microsoft at the time basically said, we don't know why it couldn't work. So this thing was born at Cargill, and this is a very unique situation. And again, you know, Jason coming in, hey, guess what? You're deploying Link 2013, which he's done, I don't know how many times prior to that, but this is what we're going to be doing at Cargill. And kind of like, you know, Link Certified Master, I don't know what you guys are smoking, essentially, for lack of a better term, but but it all worked out, and just...
12 cigarettes.
Yeah, there you go. So what do we have? We have two hidden DMZ front-end pools, one per hemisphere site. You know, we're east, or we're NALA on the west, APA on the east. On each site, we have this hidden DMZ where there's a picture coming up next that'll kind of show just how that URL hits, gets authenticated, and then, you know, gets passed through to CNET. So each hidden DMZ contains a pool with two front ends in that pool and then two SQL servers in mirror. This resulted in us building an entirely new VMware environment. What happened basically is Cargill's always had this demand or this potential. They've always had this want to have this hidden DMZ virtualized environment, but they've never had a project that they could basically pin that on. So when the security team found out what we were going to do, they said, hey, by the way, you got to do this virtually. And then Steve had to buy and stand up an entire new ESX environment in our hidden DMZ world, which I have some stats below. Obviously, that added significant capital and time, you know, to the tune of about $300,000 and 3 months of the project getting pushed out. There is a, again, some of you that are maybe interested in this whole hidden DMZ director alley we have, Jason wrote a very interesting, very thorough blog about that. I'm not going to click the link from here, but it's very easy to find on Google, essentially. And many of you, if you're looking to deploy Link, I mean, security departments are you know, picking up steam, and there's a lot of requirements. We're not the only company that has a lot of maybe crazy security, you know, et cetera. So this might be something that may be coming your way, too. But final slide here is just how that, you know, how that URL join comes through. I guess it does display okay up there. I was kind of worried. So you can see that, you know, that user, it's just that it's the meet URL. So it's that first URL. It goes down, you know, to the hidden DMZ, gets authenticated, and then on to CNET. And we've been running strong for, well, since September. We have not had one issue whatsoever with this unsupported realm of security that we have. So it works. It works well. Thank you, Jason, for obviously making it happen. And yeah, it's been, like I said, it's been a fun ride. I mean, we haven't had any MIs. You know, we got 70,000 users. We're using a million minutes a week on Link. We're saving a ton of money. Ton of money based on not writing intercall checks. And yeah, that was my bit for the infrastructure side. So up next is some conferencing stuff that Mr. Millage, the voice architect, will take you through.
Thanks, Matt. And I would also just mention that we don't have any users home to that pool. The hidden DMZ pool, there are no users. It's just for that external authentication. So when Steve sent us the email and said, send us your shirt size, I was kind of excited. I was going to get a speaker shirt. And we found out yesterday that only the main speaker gets the speaker shirt. So I was a little disappointed until I found out that the color of the shirt is called Harvest Grape. So I was okay. So here you have a little bit of Harvest Grape on the slide. So you are probably going to be familiar with the same challenges that you're having in your organization that we had or are having in our organization in terms of dial-up for the conferencing. Again, we went live with conferencing September 26th, and as Matt just mentioned, in January we had 3.64 million minutes of Link conferencing. A lot of that's coming through dial-up access. So our challenge was we could not replicate the same global footprint that our existing provider had. And we were not scoped to be able to do that either. So we didn't have a silver bullet global service for dial-up dial tone or PSTN access. But what we did do was we set achievable objectives, and we said, okay, for year one, because we're trying to pay for our project in year one by knocking off all this third-party conferencing, let's just do the 80-20 rule. Let's put dial-up conferencing and dial tone in our data centers where we'll have the front-end pools and go after where our biggest hot spots of users are going to be in those areas anyway. So let's go after that year one. Cargill is not a big SIP trunking user yet. We're pretty behind in that regard, so we're using traditional PRI, PSTN services. And then year two, let's evaluate where are our pain points? Where are users struggling to get access? We do have the dial back feature, but still, if your headset adoption is not where it needs to be, and if you've got some users that really need to get dialed in from a cell phone or whatnot, we will look at those year two, year three, and on out and put additional gateways out there, unless there are some additional services or offerings that are coming out, which I know we heard a little bit about this morning. So what we did for year one, we installed 10 audio codes, Mediant 1000 gateways. Again, these are located on the same LAN segment, essentially, as our front-end servers. And these are in our DC locations. And to save cost, we hung off our Cisco gateways. Cargill's got about a 30% exposure in terms of Cisco telephony out there. And fortunately, in all of our data centers, we happen to have those Cisco resources. So rather than purchase a PRI from a phone company and bring all that in, plus you have a tromboning type effect where your calls are going out Cisco and then coming back in through the phone company, this just made a lot of sense. So we hang off of Cisco gateways and have the dial tone services that in that way. Here's a little diagram that shows what we did in our data centers. We put a pair in SAS Van Gant. We actually do use a SIP trunk there because in the case of SAS Van Gant, we didn't have co-location of the Cisco call manager in the same location as the gateways. They were in two different buildings. And obviously, we had some distance limitations with PRIs. Yes, ma'am? It's in the EU. Belgium. Thank you. And but in all the other locations, we just use traditional PRI services, a pair in Singapore and a pair in Sao Paulo, one in Cobham because we had a Metro E connection here from our front ends in SAS Van Gant. We have a large office in Cobham and a lot of conferencing users there. And with the Metro E, it seemed to make sense. We tied into the PBX there. And the only place really where we didn't hang off of Cisco gateways was in Elk Grove, which is Chicago. And we just brought in services. And the reason is because we didn't have Cisco services in that particular data center. So dial-up access, we also do some least cost routing in some cases for the dial back, but we have a long way to go with regard to that. Steve talked earlier that a lot of our locations are in remote areas, and those remote areas don't have very good bandwidth in many cases. So we employ CAC, and when you have 1,000 locations and several thousand subnets, you go crazy with CAC. So crazy that we just called it AFCAC. So I know you guys want to say it. So on the count of three, we're all going to say it. One, two, three, AFCAC. Very good. So we had 5,000 subnets that we mapped to 1,000 sites, mapped to four regions, and assigned one of 10 CAC policies. And I want to point out Richard Brithenson with Avtex helped with this quite a bit. And to get 5,000 subnets in, you just use the import command, which is awesome, as long as your network team can provide you with all the data. So our CAC policies that we came up with are essentially based on available bandwidth. And again, kudos to Richard for that. So I had to blur the slides a little bit to pass our privacy stuff. But if you want to learn more about this, I know Richard does a great session on this, but how we arrived at some of these audio limits, we can go into more detail on that a little bit later, but that just gives you a little bit of a picture there. Obviously, you want to deploy QoS. We took a little bit different approach for conferencing with regards to QoS. So our Cisco team's over here, and our Link team's over here, and we're separated by a floor at our main office center, which is good, because, you know, it's not a 100% friendly environment. You know, obviously, we're taking a little bit of traffic. But the issue with QoS and with CAC in general is that our CAC won't talk to their CAC, and their CAC won't talk to our CAC, so AFCAC. So what we decided to do was utilizing an unused queue on our WANs, and Link allows you the opportunity to use different ports for just conferencing. So we selected some port ranges for conferencing, and using ACLs on our routers, we were able to shove conferencing into an unused bucket, the AF queue, and we basically get all that bandwidth into ourselves. And for conferencing, AF is great. It's working fine. Just a couple of stats or a couple slides here I thought were interesting. This is just a snapshot of one of our Mediant 1000 gateways. This one in particular had been up and running for about 302 days. It had 84 calls on it at the time and 193,000 calls. So let's move on to what is going to be phase three real quick before I turn it over to Brendan Anderson to talk about client issues. This is really the next step for us. And maybe some of you are already there, but we started our journey back in, about a year ago. We had a dry corn site, dry corn milling site in Paris, Illinois. They came to us three times and said, please, we want to try Link as our PBX. Our PBX is old. It's failing. We want to try this. We told them no three times. We weren't ready. Plus, it was 80 phones. And we didn't want to start with 80. We wanted to start with 20. And we quickly discovered that we could utilize the Mediant 1000 gateway and do Active Directory lookups. So we used the Mediant as a drop and insert. And what that means is, instead of the PRI coming in from the phone company and going into the Avaya switch first, it now goes into the audio codes gateway and then goes out to the Avaya switch. That allowed us to only do 20 phones first and sort of get our feet wet, find out what our pain points were and where our struggles were and solve some of these problems and only do 25 and actually also only do them one at a time. Because now when the call comes in, and the phone company delivers those four digits, the Mediant 1000 does a digit manipulation, makes it E164, sends it up to Active Directory and says, do you know this person? Does this person have Link? If the answer is yes, it's a Link call. If the answer is no, it quickly goes back out in hundredths of a second out to the Avaya switch. So we were able to do a very, very soft cutover instead of a flash cut on a Friday night, cross your fingers, and hope that it all works. So in Paris, what you're seeing here, Paris, Illinois, yeah, when I said I was going to Paris. what you're seeing, the very first picture is a phone on, a common area phone in a lab environment. You're seeing then a CX500, I believe it's 500, yeah, on the wall. Don't forget to order your wall mount brackets when you do some of these deployments. And then, our main admin, if you will, or receptionist desk needed more buttons than we can provide on the traditional CX600 or 500 phone. So we employed a VVX series phone from Polycom, and we actually happened to get in on a beta of the add-on module. So really a nice phone. So what's next? What we've just completed, our second site, 25 phones. And this is Blue Earth, or Marna, Minnesota. This is a plant-type environment. It's a milling environment. And we went with a VVX series there as well. And we're going to continue to deploy in the next 30 days or 60 days. I believe we have four more sites on the docket. So we're trying to figure out what's our process going to be, who's going to do it, how are we going to support it, what are the costs, and we're getting great data right now on all of that. And that's where we're headed next. We'd love to do it where we don't have to go there. If we can ship everything, configure the gateway and ship it, or if we can get access to the gateway once it arrives on site, then that's what we want to do. So that is what is next with Enterprise Voice. And we're also working with a drone company to deliver. No, this is just a joke. This is sort of illustrating what I was trying to mention was we're going to try to do this where we don't have to travel, where we can save the business unit money. Can we ship the phones? Can we do the training online? And can we keep those costs out? So I believe that is it for me, and we'll take questions later, but welcome Brendan Anderson.
Hi, my name is Brendan Anderson. I've been with the Cargill Link team since about May of 2012, and I've been specializing in some of the end-user client issues and discoveries. Just get a survey from the room. How many are running the Link 2013 client right now? How many are in a hybrid where they're running Link 2010 and Link 2013? A couple? Anyone on anything older? Okay. How about Office? What level of Office are we? Office 2010? Office 2013? Hybrid of both? Okay. All right. So when you're evaluating whether you want Link 2013, if you want to distribute Link 2013, the customers usually get excited about our tab conversations. I'm having a hard time seeing this. Persistent chat, spell checker, and cosmetics. Oh, it's right there in front of me. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this the whole time. One of the things that we weren't ready to roll out all of Office 2013. We have a lot of interdependencies and third-party applications that interface with the Office engine. We weren't ready to go there quite yet. As probably most of you know, Link 2013 is available as an individual product for installation for volume licensed customers. However, when you're constructing the package and running it through the OCT, you want to be very careful about what additional components you choose to install or not install. Because if you make the wrong choices, you can break things like the Windows search in Office 2010. Some features in Link 2013, like the spell check feature, get challenging to working if you just install Link 2013 and not the entire Office 2013 suite. And you want to carefully evaluate your installation base. It may be more painful for you to be in a hybrid environment where Link is at 2013 and the rest of the environment is at Office 2010 versus having the entire client at an Office 2013 level. One of the most critical hardware components of having a great Link 2013 is the headset. A user's experience in Link can evaluate the entire experience based on the quality of the headset. That's what we have found. You want to make sure that the headset you get for your users are a USB certified Link headset. Cargill has invested a lot in Plantronics headsets, and you want to make sure that it's the Class M model. Headsets, the little headsets that come with your iPhone, they work. But they're really not recommended for a corporate environment. Don't let the user get away with using integrated speakers and microphones on their laptop for the auto experience. That cause distractions, and there's a greater chancity for audio degradation issues. So don't let that happen. And make sure that the device that you choose, make sure that that's set up as the default communication device within the playback device tab in the Windows Sound Control Panel. Anyone in the room also have users that are running Cisco IP Communicator? Okay. So, as you may have discovered, there are challenges in getting everything to work right, especially when you want to have the same headset that can toggle between both environments. This is what we've found. If you have CIPC in your environment, make sure it's at 8.6.3 or higher. And we have found that Link-certified headsets work just fine with both Cisco IP Communicator and with Link. We initially had a lot of non-M Plantronic headsets, and they caused a lot of problems with them. So we got rid of all those, and we're just going with Class M headsets now.
Separately, did you mandate it with a Link rollout?
Yeah, do you want to maybe answer that, how users can pick their headsets? Is that,
and how did you mandate it, right? You're going to get Link, you must buy a headset, business group A, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so we had on the headset question, just repeat it. So how did you mandate what headset people could pick, or did you just let it into the wild? We had, like I said, a pretty large Cisco deployment, and this headset of choice in the Cisco deployment was a Plantronics headset. And so we worked with that team to say, what's going to be the least disruptive in our environment? You know, from a vendor standpoint, somebody called the help desk, okay, let's see if we can leverage Plantronics first. And we had great partnership from that company. They came over and did a bunch of open houses with us. They have quality products, and they have a great solution called Spokes that helps you kind of navigate between Cisco IP Communicator and Link, so you don't get dial tone in your ear at the wrong moment and things like that. So we try to say, you know, from our website presence, you'd see that represented at the top. And then there's other devices in there too, and we don't mandate. So if somebody wants a Sennheiser or, you know, Jabra or something, and they just happen to like that, but we're going to say we're going to test with this one. We're going to try to make sure that we have a story that says this is going to work. And if you find that you have a different experience and you have a quality experience of something else, you're free to choose it. We work with our sourcing providers through strategic sourcing at Cargill to put things on the grid, and we buy it all from a specific vendor for various reasons. And you know, whatever's on their list, they can buy. But we try to say, when we go live and test and whatever, we'll certify with one type of headset.
And we have users all over the globe. Well, we have a strong presence in India, and the budgets there just don't allow for you know, a wide range of headsets. So we try to be flexible in that area, but we do try to encourage that's a Link certified headset. One of the things that we discovered when launching the Link 2013 client. It's kind of like you're rolling out the latest and greatest video game. And Link 2013 is a very hardware opportunistic piece of software. So you want to make sure things like your BIOS firmware is up to date. You've got the latest and greatest audio driver, the latest and greatest video driver, because Link uses those things a lot. So make sure you check Windows Update and your manufacturer website for those things. If we had an instance where we have traders that have a laptop that's docked and it's hooked up to like 5,000 monitors at once, so they've got these external USB video display adapters, and we were finding that Link was crashing all the time every time they started up. And it turned out to be they had an outdated video display adapter. As soon as we updated the adapter, they never had a problem again in Link. So be very cognizant of those kinds of things. There's a couple of hot fixes I mentioned there. Some of those might be a little bit out of date, but you just want to make sure that you you keep up to date on your Link 2013 client patches. And as I mentioned before, if you're running CIP the Cisco IP communicator, make sure you're at least at 8.6.3.
Yeah, and if we could, yeah, the microphone here is hooked up so that it catches the recording. And again, we have these free Skype $10 cards, so if you ask a question.
Oh, wait a minute.
we only have a few left, so you might want to get your questions in early.
Well, I asked about Belgium. I don't know.
So we have Link 2010 deployment, and we should be going to 2013 very soon server. But we have a mix of clients, 2010 and 2013.
Right.
Now, have you ever seen that, you know, a certain version of client, like subversion of client, has better quality compared to the other version of client? Because we have seen from time to time people complain about audio quality issues, and I'm trying to see if that is related to the client version which is installed.
The Link 2013 seems to be a little more sensitive than Link 2010. You want to to say it another way, Link 2010 is a little more tolerant of outdated drivers than Link 2013 is. So if you're that might be where you're seeing the issue. Like we saw that a lot where someone had Link 2010 and it worked great. And as soon as we installed Link 2013, the complaints just went through the roof. And they're like, please, can I have Link 2010 back? Well, once we addressed the PC health on the issue, making sure they had the updated drivers and things like that, those problems went away.
When you say updated drivers, means the audio drivers.
Audio drivers and video drivers. Oh, yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Cool. And that's great. Thanks for the question. And if anybody has a question, just interrupt me. But so why were we successful? And we only have a couple slides left here. But and Jason, after we had kind of a debrief, how did we get this done in the time frame? And we had some significant challenges. Like, we were going to go live in June or July, and wound up getting this very high-level security discussion going about what was going on with the port traffic 443. It couldn't come in all authenticated, so we had to bounce it off a hidden DMZ. All these things took us months and months to get done. But what we did through all that is, we hit the I believe button. We really got behind this product. We had good internal communications. We saw some evidence of that in the internship project. Also, we had our professionals within Cargill who do corporate communications helping engage us, talk to their leadership about how we're going to get that done. And just really were resilient in our approach. So we were out there doing advocacy, proactively talking to people about what we're doing and why, because a lot of the initial response was like, you guys are going to make everybody buy a new headset? How much does a headset cost? $50 or $100, depending on what you want to get. You can spend a lot of money on headsets. But when we got out there, it's information about here's where our spend's happening. Like, we had people building conference rooms. And a conference room, just to take like an office and turn it into a conference room, we have to hire that out through facility services. They bring in contractors, they put in new hardware, and that's a $10,000 investment on just a small room. We said, how about you just put a Link speakerphone in there and let people plug in with their USB device, and it doesn't cost you anything. And again, we talked about conferencing span, how much we're doing in roaming charges. We had people coming up to us and saying, and my cell phone bill went from $700 a month down to $60. Literally, my inbox was full of testimonials like that. We put that into material that we could get in front of people. And then, when we went out with this, hey, everybody's got to buy a headset, people were like, okay, let me go back to this. And they pulled up the sheet where they could see all their different costs. And they said, okay, I can buy 15 headsets. It's going to cost me this much. I'm spending this much in these other places. That's a good investment. There were some places that weren't doing a lot of travel. They weren't doing a lot of long distance phone calls or conferencing, and it wasn't a good choice for them. But that information helped us push aside some of those initial challenge questions that you might run into. We engaged other teams about their perspectives. We did some learning. We do about this again. We for a long time were talking about our strategy, why we wanted to get to where we wanted to get, and we built that story. We brought in super talent. So again, put out a nod to Aptex and Proficient and the resources in the room here that helped us get that live. And we trusted them to do their work. So we didn't get in their business of how are we going to do that. So as a leadership organization, we were given empowerment to go forward, and we just let these people do their work. We didn't, and in fact, we didn't do a health check right before we went live with Link 2013. And we talked about that. Should we do a health check? Should we stress test this thing? we had good information from people that had done this thing before, and we had done our own pressure testing in terms of loading up a pretty substantial pilot. So we're pretty comfortable. Let's just go live. So taking some risk, but it turned and paid off. And again, hire the right talent and trust them. Brought in people on major decisions, but really we had empowerment to make decisions like, how are we going to do QoS on our network? We worked with our networking team and said, okay, you guys got Cisco going and prioritized queues. You want to put Link in there. How are we going to get that done? We don't have one thing that manages call admission control for both. We just figured out a strategy. We floated it up to some technical people, and pretty much they said, sounds like you guys have done your thinking, and go live. So the leadership said, we'll trust you guys as well from an internal Cargill standpoint. And again, some of the proof of having large pilot adoption and proving the business value helped us get to the place where they were pretty comfortable that we knew what we were doing. We also involved Cargill people in every step of the way as much as we possibly could, and there's definitely times when Richard or Jason had to be heads down, pounding through things, or back to, hey, we think this thing's going to work. You just come in and build it. In fact, this is the only way we're going to get approval to go live. We didn't have a lab environment. So Jason's like, okay, I'm going to lab this out. We don't have a lab environment. So I don't know. He's got it going on in his garage, but he'd go and proficient, whatever was going on there. They come back and say, yep, that's going to work, and we'll build it. But we had to have people tethered at the hip for the most part so that we could learn. Again, we brought in people, very knowledgeable people, but with no Link experience as we started to build this environment and really did on-the-job training and send people off to conferences and training events, but involve people along the way. Question.
How did y'all make a decision about going physical or virtual for... Oh, thanks.
Yeah, so the question, how did we make the decision going physical or virtual? We had a lot of interest in our company of going virtual. One of the things that we were worried about it was the dedicated capacity, whether it was memory, the SQL database. Did we have somebody next door running SQL that's going to kick off a big, massive update and trample on us? And what about the ports and the NIC cards and all the port traffic that we might be not able to dedicate 100%? We're just uncomfortable with that whole thing. We also wanted to be in a position where this is a critical connectivity capability for the company. We didn't want to be having to go through a change control and have to get approval from 15 people to shut something down and restart it. And just the way our change control works in our company was that if we had dedicated systems, we could make that decision ourselves. Let's bounce that server.
Even if it was a dedicated ESX
box? Yeah, even if it was a dedicated ESX, the change control and process environment in Cargill is extremely rigorous. So not saying we can't do an emergency change control fast, it's just complicated. The other thing too is from an ESX standpoint, we weren't fully mature globally. We have 4 pools that hold people, 6 in total. And in the DMZ environment, we didn't have virtual at the time. We didn't know that we'd ultimately have to build a virtual environment because we thought we'd be able to go live with just base functionality. And so we said, yeah, we don't have the virtualized environment. We don't want to spend that money. Let's stand it up physical. So as it turns out, we now have a DMZ environment that we had to construct on virtual, and it is a pretty good quality experience, although we have not tried real-time communication through it. It's just really to bounce that authentication traffic. But we have heard peer companies within the Minneapolis area that have gone completely virtual, and they have no complaints. So, another question? You want
to start by saying thank you, really good presentation.
Oh,
thank you for sharing. We went from 2020 to 2013 in June this year, and we're adding dial out for everyone in Sweden. We're a global company with Sweden, 2,000 users in May, and then replacing the PBX in October. And I'm thinking, have you considered just not replacing the desk phone, instead just giving them a headset, saying that, okay, soft phone and headset, that's enough?
So I might need your help a little bit, Joe. But so we have haven't told people that they'd have to replace the desk phone yet. And in fact, in our company, because of E911 requirements or the emergency dialing, we've basically said keep your desk phone. And we've given them the option to use a headset. And as we go live in some of these locations, we're starting to give people a managed choice there, depending on if they're an E911 state or not, with what the law says. But in those places where we can divert some costs to just headsets, we'll try to do that. But so far in our corporate environment and all of our other places has been pretty much keep your desk phone for now, and then we're going to kind of learn as we grow with the E911 stuff and emergency dialing. I don't know.
Some of it's workforce related. So in some of our plants, you know, they're common area phones, or they're maybe a plant type worker shared phone, and so it's just
For shared phones and
right.
Common area phones.
Exactly.
Yes. How about your mobile users? Do they have a desk phone and mobile phone?
Yeah, the mobile phone is really a separate choice. So we tell people that maybe you can offset some cost by going all mobile, but you know we found that you need to have a pretty good connectivity, so 3G, 4G, LTE, we've kind of done some testing on that and gotten some feedback. People have given us feedback that you better have 4G and better get full capability through that mobile.
Yeah, now you're talking the Link Mobile. I was just thinking regular, agreement
PC.
With the operator. No, just if you have a mobile phone today and you have a desk phone and you have your Link phone, so then drop the desk phone. And
yeah. That whole total cost of ownership thing, right? So
yeah.
You have all these different devices. You have a phone, a PC, a mobile phone. Can you drop some of them? You know, we're starting to look at tablets. We're finding that people want more devices. And so we haven't had a policy that says move away from anything yet. We've just deployed new things into the environment and just see what's happening. So from a policy standpoint, we don't have the governance in the company to really say do that. So we're just trying to give people a managed choice and tell them, you know, if you can offset some cost, more power to you, and we'll try to give you as much capability that lets you do that as possible. But as a small team, we don't know the laws in the different countries, we don't know the plant environment, and so we really just try to let Link out in the wild with as much functionality as possible and see what happens.
Yeah, we have a bit the same. If we live dial out, and then people just realize that, okay, I don't need the discount.
Yeah, right, yeah, you see a lot of that where you know, people start trending to something like the mobile capability. They see they're hardly even using their desk phone. We have had people ask to unplug desk phones and get rid of them. But again, so far we've been pretty hesitant to do that just because of emergency dialing. We just don't want to deal with that requirement yet.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-oh, she's got... now you get the...
A little on the forward-thinking side. Any thoughts? Does your organization handle contact center, right? So the Cisco, whoever's got contact center. Some places that when Cisco IP PBX, they still have a via contact centers. So what's the thoughts in terms of contact center and where that may be down the line?
We're going after low-hanging fruit right now, which is not the contact center. We think that in almost every case, we can do anything that a Cisco IP PBX can do, or phone system can do. When the Cisco guys get on the phone with us, they're like, "Well, we use a port to raise a gate arm out of the front of the plant. What do you use to do that? We use an FXS port. Oh, well, we've got an FXS port too. So it's very. I mean, there's total parity. Maybe the exception is contact center, but we're going after low-hanging fruit. We're going to try to do a lot of sites that are 25 users, 25 phones or less for now, and we'll see what happens next. I know we've met with Clarity Connect on some of their offerings, and they've got a really attractive product suite, and certainly Link can do contact center with the additional services of somebody like Clarity Connect, and there are others out there as well.
And the last part. But so as many can ask questions.
My question is in regards to these small areas that you're doing, so where it's 25 users or less, is that are you taking the phone system out or you're just giving them Link phones?
Phone system comes out.
So are you doing SBAs at those locations, or what are you doing for a survivable branch, or really are you backhauling all of the SIP back to Minneapolis and going out that route?
We're using local gateways for some of these sites. If we think that it's critical and if the business wants to spend the money on an SBA. We'll put an SBA in Paris. The first example that I showed you has an SBA, local gateway, local PRIs coming in. The Marna site, 20 phones. We did a local gateway, media bypass, and so if the WAN goes down, there's no Link. Yeah, good question. We're feeling our way through some of this, and it may be the right decision, might be the wrong decision. One of the things we think is right is these media 1,000 gateways are modular. If we make a mistake, and we should have put an SBA in, we can just slide the card in later. So, one thing I was just going to mention too on this question on hybriding 2010 and 13, and Jason and Richard, help me if I get this wrong. But when you're in hybrid mode and you're on a conference and you have other users that are using the other version, you're sending two video streams. I have that right, right, Richard? So the idea is try to not operate in hybrid very long if you can get away with it. We have sites that are still using T1, 1.5 meg circuits. If your client is trying to send five streams, it's not good for the health of your WAN. Yeah.
What's your experience deploying or using Link in different languages?
Yeah, so we have offered the Office 2013 language packs for client teams to install in their regions. I think we've picked like 10 languages that they can install. And so that's the difference between Link 2010 had a language pack for itself. For Link 2013, it just leverages the Office 2013 language packs.
So we had some experience. We used SCCM or Alteryx when we went live and deployed it. I mean, some of the automation in terms of putting the package down in Link 2013, then applying the language pack and trying to automate it, we haven't gotten that perfectly smooth yet. So we put the language packs out there and in the
So the language pack is a separate package, but you do have to install the base installation before you can install the language pack.
So we coach our client support teams. There's about 400 individuals globally that kind of do that stuff. And they basically install Link first, pick the language pack of their flavor, and then put that down second, just because we haven't gotten the automated process to work quite smoothly yet. And that's something we continue to
Yeah, and depending on what your software distribution mechanism, whether it's Alteryx or SCCM, there's some intelligence you can...
But people so far not giving us any, it's a very global company, many languages spoken, business language is pretty much English, but a lot of people struggle, to communicate, and the extra language packs that we picked,
right. Seems we all, a good... Yeah, there's also the conversion translator, where you can type in one language and they can get it in their native language, which is awesome because now your native language is no longer a barrier. Communication.
Our pilot, we had given one guy from South Africa reached out to me. He's like, I've been talking to people in China all the time. He's like, can I be on the pilot to get the new client before we rolled it out to everybody? We gave it to him, and even, I think even in 2010 they receive it.
Well, yeah, and it's very empowering. Suddenly you're having conversations with people in the company that you never would have had conversations before with because you weren't speaking the same language. That's no longer an issue.
And we're getting good feedback that it's the Bing Translate in the background does a very good job with that.
Yep.
All right, I think we're close to the end of time, but I did want to have one opportunity for you guys to see Brendan in full regalia. And I'm just going to ask you, so what would a pirate think?
In Link 2013, you will find your win in your sails and navigate the high seas of enterprise communication and collaboration. Savvy?
All right, thanks for coming, and we'd love to talk more with anybody. So.